I think a classic Canadian broadcaster, Jeff Merrick, other than yourself, once said, "Everything is happening!"
That was Bob Cole, and maybe Bob, other than they're going home, referring to the Russians in that game against the Philadelphia Flyers of the Spectrum. Other than they're going home, I think everything is happening, maybe Bob Cole's greatest call.
We've got realignment, we've got a Jordan 2-2 suspension, we've got Aaron Portsline coming up later in the program to talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets and how all this realignment stuff will affect their franchise, and coming up very soon, Puck Daddy's own Ryan Lambert makes his first appearance on Merrick versus Wyshynski to talk about his epic, and I mean epic, interview with John Steigerwald today on Trib Live Radio.
Okay, now, for those that don't know the backstory, John Steigerwald inferred quite strongly that the reason Alexander Ovechkin, this is in the Observer Reporter, I believe, Greg?
Yes, correct.
In the Observer Reporter, yesterday or 2 days ago, maintaining that the reason that Alexander Ovechkin's production has greatly declined is that he is no longer on steroids. That is his belief. He has no fact to back this up other than, you know, a doctor that was arrested or charged.
That's the thing. He also inferred that Ovechkin was treated by a doctor that treated Tiger Woods, but that's what we like to call in the business fiction.
And he
has since corrected the record. But the thing is that, like, the entire debate between Lambert and Steigerwald in the radio today was hilarious. It was Lambert giving him enough rope to hang himself at least 20 times, and Steigerwald not owning up to the fact that he libeled Alex Ovechkin in a column saying he was treated by a steroid doctor that he wasn't treated by.
Yeah, that's really not good. Full disclosure, by the way, Dr. Tony Gallia treated me for 2 years in 1994 to 96. So clearly, I'm on the gas.
Juice.
So as I'm, you see, can't spell juice
without Jeff. I'll tell you that.
This is me shaking up a can of coconut water that I'm about to drink. This is about the strongest stuff that I put in my body now. But full disclosure, he did treat me for 2 years in between 94 and 1996. I had a hand injury and he helped me rehab it, and a shoulder injury. So there you go, Dr. Gallia.
So we'll talk to Lambert in a second or two. But the big story today, obviously, is realignment. We'll talk a lot about realignment today. Here on the program. We talked about it yesterday. We wanted to get your conference names, but now we know it's come to fruition. And here's the thing about realignment that I think needs to be said. There's a lot of celebrating out there because travel schedules have gotten, if not better, then more equitable. I mean, I think we can all agree the Eastern Conference is now having to travel a little bit more than they used to in the past. That's fine. Yep. It's a good thing. The West is happy. I think people are jazzed about some of the new divisions. I mean, even though you've got two that are 8 and two that are 7, I think people are excited about the groupings of these divisions, and I think there's some excitement about a return to divisional playoffs. I want to just caution everybody. I'm 34 years old. I remember divisional play. Merrick obviously remembers it a little bit better than I do because he's a little bit older. But here's the thing with it. It wasn't peaches and cream, man. It wasn't all sunshine and rainbows. Every single year, there was a team finishing fifth in one division who looked over and saw a team with like 88 points in the other division finishing fourth and saying, this is a jack-effed format that we're using. And that's why people were really, really happy that when they went to 1-8, the best teams in hockey were making the playoffs every season.
For those that are of my vintage, Greg, and perhaps you can recall this well as well, the Norris Division was kind of a joke in a lot of ways. Toronto and Detroit and Minnesota and St. Louis, because you would make it in the Norris Division with getting over about 60 points, where there'd be other teams in other divisions that would rock about 80, 85 and not make it into the playoffs. Getting into the weakest division it really was, and I don't like the word fair. I think the word fair does a lot of damage to people, both in life and specifically in sports. Like, if there was one word that I would lobby to remove from the dictionary, it's the word fair, because I don't think it exists. I don't really think it does exist, nor should it in a lot of ways, but it just wasn't fair that the Norris Division sort of existed as the weakest sister or brother in the NHL, and teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs were getting in with 57 points every year, where other stronger teams were on the outside looking in. So that, and to your other point, there were a lot, I mean, what it did is towards the end of the season, games became really meaningless. Like the last couple of weeks in divisional play, the last couple of weeks really, and because everyone's memory is so short. You're right. Everyone's like, hey, it's high fives and you can't keep enough champagne at the liquor stores and 30 NHL markets right now because realignment is going to solve everything. Well, it's not because there were a lot of dud matchups that you saw each and every year and teams dropped out early. Like, say whatever you want about what the salary cap has done, call it parity, call it mediocrity, at least towards the end of the season, you have meaningful games. And a lot of markets are still in it. Some are clinging by a thread, but you're still, it takes a long time to officially get eliminated from the playoffs in the NHL right now. I mean, you really have to tank. But in the divisional system, and I can recall it well in the Patrick and the Smythe and the Norris and the Adams, you were eliminated earlier on in the season. So let's, to your point, Greg, I agree with you. Let's say, hey, it's a wonderful day for the NHL. It's a big achievement for Gary Bettman. This is up there, I think, with the salary cap and getting rid of Bob Goodenow. But let's not get carried away here. This is not the, you know, the, I'm not saying that it's fool's gold, but I'm not saying it's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow just yet.
I'll say this, man. You know, you got to feel good about Dallas. You got to feel good about Minnesota. You got to feel good about Columbus. You got to feel good that Mike Ilitch got his deal, even though he didn't get a chance to move to the Eastern Conference. By the way, I know that I sometimes have an adversarial relationship with Red Wings fans. I get that. If you complain at all about the National Hockey League conspiring against your franchise, and I'm talking there's a 20-year window now. If you complain at all, just remember what happened last night. They blew up the entire league to make sure that your franchise was happy. They got rid of the conferences. They got rid of the playoff format. They blew up the entire league because they didn't want to piss off Mike Ilitch.
But that was because Mike Ilitch did them a solid years ago by saying, okay, I'm going to plug my nose and we'll go to the Western Conference. But Gary, if you move this thing an inch, we want to go back. And that's the deal that they had. So that was because Ilitch did Gary Bettman a solid. And that was Gary, I mean, mind you, it was a hell of a long, you know, it's a hell of a solid to get it back because they reconfigured the entire league and changed a number of things. And we don't really know whether they're going to be good or bad or not. But that was because Ilitch did him a good. So
right,
good on
exactly.
Gary. He took care of his buddy there.
But I feel good about some things. On Puck Daddy today, we had a list of sort of the winners and losers. I think the teams I just mentioned should be very happy. I'm not sure the Florida team should be all that happy. The Whispers, Merrick, and this is confirmed.
Oh, by the way,
confirmed. Yes.
That graphic by Cassie McClellan is excellent. Like,
it was
awesome.
if you
want to have a look, you know, visually, go to Puck Daddy and have a look visually at what this looks like now, and then make up your minds whether it relates to, you know, how teams match up geographically, what this means for travel, what this means for times, what this means for starting, what this means for crossover, etc. Have a good look, and the two teams that stick out like a sore frickin' thumb, Tampa and Florida,
yeah.
They gotta be some kind of upset.
The scuttlebutt off the meetings was that Tampa and Florida opposed this realignment.
As of right now, we haven't figured out.
Yeah, that they were there. That Montreal was one of the teams that might have opposed it. People were saying maybe the Rangers because of the Dolans and whatever might have opposed it. We don't know for sure who had the no votes, but it would stand to logic would dictate that the Florida teams would not be happy with now having to fly up, play the Northeast teams. They'll get a boost in the attendance maybe from the Snowbirds that hang out down in the Sunshine State.
That's a myth. Big myth. No, it's a huge, it's an overplayed myth. And we heard this going back to, you know, the initial expansion of 1967. You know, Jack Kent Cook, hey, all these snowbirds going to be in Los Angeles and they miss hockey and they're going to fill our rink. And Jack Kent Cook's point was always the reason these Canadians went to these, you know, warmer climes is because they don't like hockey. Like, if you love hockey, you stay and you watch hockey. I will probably never leave Canada, Greg. You know why? Not because the geography's great, not because I love this stuff, but because I love hockey. Would I be more comfortable in Florida retiring one day from a taxation standpoint? Absolutely. The weather's nicer. I'd love to live in Los Angeles, but the pull of hockey will keep me here forever. If you're a hockey fan, you stay. Jack Kent Cook's point, I think, was a good one back, you know, after 1967 when he realized that, yeah, you know what? A lot of those Canadians, they didn't leave, or the ones that left are the ones that don't like hockey in the first place.
Interesting. All right. We're going to talk plenty of realignment stuff later in the show. We want you guys to chime in. Question of the day, who is your biggest winner? Who is your biggest loser in realignment? We'll be reading those later in the show. But right now, let's start the program, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's our hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
and Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sabine is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Good times all around. Like we said, Lambert joining us in a second. Portsline later in the show. We'll also talk about this Jordan Tutu suspension. I know my partner in crime here, Mr. Merrick, might have a thing or two to say about that.
I don't like it. Because of the slippery slope or the door that it opens. I saw Crosby bump Thomas last night. I saw David Booth bump into Mika Kiprusoff. I'm expecting to see some Shanahan videos and get back into the studio, Shanny. We don't like you in front of a curtain. I don't like Pebble Beach, Shanny. I want studio, Shanny.
This one's going to be a bit of a marathon. I think we'll probably go over time with this one just because we have so much to cover with the realignment and everything else. But one more note on realignment. We obviously, everybody's been talking about the conference names, whatever. I really found it interesting that these guys get done with the voting and whatever. And by the way, the numbers that came out for the voting, I think it was like 26-4. Let's remember here that once it becomes apparent that the winds blow in a certain direction, everyone's going to jump in. They're not going to vote against Garrett on principle. You get me?
Do you know how I sent a couple of notes this morning and I haven't heard back? Do you know, because I would imagine that the voting would go alphabetically, right? And once Gary has his 20, to your point, who's going to go against him, knowing how that may come back to bite you? So it's 26-4, if that is, you know, the accurate record of who voted where. I'm not sure that I'm buying it, because I think there are a lot of teams that once it became obvious that Gary had his 20, they just plugged their nose and said, like we all do in our jobs, the three magic words, and this is a reference to The Simpsons, and Ryan Lambert will know this a lot better than both of us, because he seems to know every line in the history of that great television show. The three words that'll get you anywhere, good idea, boss. That's kind of what it sounded like to me.
The last thing I want to say about realignment before we get to Lambert, I am, like I said, they finished the vote in record time, took less than an hour for what is a very contentious issue. That's because they punted on the most important thing. The most important thing is, what do you do with the final four? What do you do with the final four teams that come out of these divisions? These conferences. What do you do with them? So that's going to be the real question. We'll debate that later on and talk to Portsline about it as well. Joining us now on the line, you know him, you love him. You probably don't love him. You probably hate him. He is the columnist for Puck Daddy on Mondays and Fridays. He writes What We Learn on Monday. He writes Trending Topics on Friday. He's one of my favorite people in the world. He is Ryan Lambert. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
We're doing well. Good, Ryan. We're doing really. What happened today? Greg calls me about an hour ago, Greg, and he said, "Did you just hear about Lambert and Steigerwald?" Like, no, I was just finishing working out, and then I went and walked my dog. I'm like, "What happened?" So, Ryan, please tell us what happened today.
I went on John Steigerwald's radio show. Well, excuse me, internet radio show in Pittsburgh.
And, hey, we have an internet radio show, you dick.
Should we be offended, Greg?
Sorry,
the contempt in his voice.
Well, I'm fired.
Please continue.
Okay, so, Andy, I was brought on, what I thought, was to discuss my article about, Steigerwald's article about Ovechkin doing steroids. It turns out that this was not so much the case, as he was just upset that I called him and his brother homers. So I got yelled at, basically, for, I don't know, what was it, 20 minutes?
That's fun.
Yeah, but you got yelled at, but it wasn't as if he was scoring points. It was like listening to, some adult relative trying to lecture some kid about something he did wrong, but talking more about his own life, about unconnected topics. Like, he spent about an hour talking about the steroid issues in the Pittsburgh Steelers locker room instead of actually defending the fact that he libeled somebody in a column.
Right. Well, you know, hey, he issued a correction, though, so everything's cool now.
What was his correction? I missed that.
He issued a correction saying, I don't know if you, because why would you have read his thing the other day, but it was basically, he said Ovechkin was connected to that Dr. Anthony Galea guy who got busted a couple years back trying to take some PEDs over the border from Canada into the U.S. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Like, I never heard one word about that. And I looked it up online. I couldn't find anybody even, like, vaguely mentioning that they could be connected. And so I brought up that this was not true, and then he issued a correction saying, well, it's not true. It does not disprove to me that Ovechkin did steroids.
Yeah, and like you said, his biggest problem was that you called his brother, Paul Steigerwald, who's the play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Penguins. You had the audacity to call him a homer, even though it is generally accepted that he is one of the biggest homers in existence. Not only on the stick, but in existence.
But Greg, I did not have definitive proof of that. Right. And therefore, I was wrong about that.
Well, now the thing I wanted to ask you, because it's obvious that one of the more remarkable things that happened today was the fact that this interview, like Lambert said on this obscure internet radio station, this interview became a trending topic worldwide, Merrick. It became a trending topic worldwide. Steigerwald was trending worldwide. And also along with that, another thing started to trend that hopefully Lambert can give us some insight on. Sidney Crosby is a vampire.
Ah.
Yeah. If he can't, you know, give me definitive proof that Alex Ovechkin has done steroids, but he chooses to put that in his columns and things like that, I feel like he should, you know, he said guilty until proven innocent is what he said. And I just feel like maybe Sidney Crosby might be a vampire. So until he can prove to me without beyond a shadow of a doubt that Sidney Crosby is not a vampire, I will choose to believe guilty until proven innocent that Crosby feasts on the blood of the living.
This This kind of has a Bush administration at the United Nations making the case for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Is that kind of how it felt with you?
I don't remember Colin Powell or whatever just being so angry, though. That's the thing.
You've done yeoman's work, sir. I was really proud of all of the work that you did today in trying to.
Is this available in?
We are processing. It'll be on Puck Daddy within the hour.
Okay,
oh, God.
So we'll have it on.
Oh, this is good.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Lambert. But moving
hey,
on.
Hey, by the way, Ryan.
Oh, yes.
Ryan. We have to get you on during the under 20 tournament, the World Juniors.
Oh yeah, you mean when Canada goes like 0-8?
No, when Canada curb stomps the United States, and we gotta get you on, and I'll pat myself on the back.
But
it's almost like we should do a daily Lambert update. Like, it's almost, you know, Greg, I'd be totally down with this if he became our World Junior reporter.
I'll be fine with that too.
I think
Lambert will be fine with that too.
That's fine.
Hey, real quick, man, so you, what's your, since we got you, and you're obviously an opinionated sort, what is your take on a realignment? Merrick and I are both a little bit skeptical about the playoff side of things, but have you embraced this new scheme for all of its glory?
I kind of like it, yeah. There's obviously always going to be the problem with the unbalanced conference sizes, and I think it's kind of bullshit that both of the Western ones have to have all the eight teams in them instead of seven, but... You know, I guess, what are you going to do except either contract or expand by two teams, and those probably won't happen anytime soon. So,
as a Calgary Flames fan, are you pleased with being in that division, knowing that you're going to have to concede a playoff spot to Vancouver and San Jose for the next decade?
Probably Edmonton.
No, we're going to make the playoffs anyway. Who cares?
This makes a good point. All right, Lambert, take a bow, sir. It was a shining moment today. Your snark won out over libel. You should be very pleased.
Snark trumps libel. Thanks, Ryan.
Goodbye, guys.
You know what?
Ryan Lambert.
He's good, man. We gotta get that guy back. I'm serious, man. World Junior Reporter, Ryan Lambert.
Totally.
Yeah.
I would love to send Lambert to World Juniors dressed as Uncle Sam. And have them interview people.
Just to interview the Canadian kids, though.
Exactly.
Just to interview the Canadian kids dressed up as Uncle Sam would be marvelous. Hey, you know what? This and I'm just looking over it because I love this map. On Casey McClellan, bravo, Casey. I'm looking at your map here again on Puck Daddy, and I'm saying to myself, you know what this map tells me, Greg Wyshynski? Phoenix is not going to Kansas City. There is one destination for Phoenix, and it
for
is
why?
Quebec
what do you
City.
Say? What do you say?
Because where do they fit?
Well,
Unless you're gonna move teams around again. Because there's
one
simple
fix. I'm of two minds on that. You could do, or three minds. You could keep them in the West if they move to Kansas City and move Columbus to the East, so you have 15-15. If you want to
but
consider
then again, you're
moving.
Then you're rejigging the whole thing.
Yeah, that you are. Or you just assume that the NHL is going to find someone to buy that team. And I've long believed that. I've long said this. Gary Bettman never loses. Gary Bettman just was found enough votes to blow up the entire league and regroup it into four conferences.
I don't believe for a second that he's gonna not find somebody, Reinsdorf, Jennings,
to buy that team and keep it in Glendale. After all the money and all the blood and all the treasure the NHL has spent to keep it there, they're gonna find a way to keep it there.
What he really did though, when it comes right down to it, Greg, is he found five. Right, because this has been an issue for the Western Conference teams since forever, you know, since the invention of the West in the NHL. So the 15 were in his hip pocket to begin with. All Gary had to do, and this may have been challenging too, but you can say to yourself, yeah, Ed Snyder and Jeremy Jacobs are right there, bam, bam. So really, only what he had to do was find three. All he had to do was find five in the East to go along with it. Right? So he had the 15 already. That was because everybody wanted that in the West. What he did was he found five in the East. That's what essentially what Gary Bettman did here.
Well, that's true. It wasn't that he somehow convinced
30 teams to completely unravel and remake the league inside of a season.
You're ruining my fantasy about Bettman. I believe that he was in a filibuster. Like a Jimmy Stewart movie. He was sweating. He was reading from the phone book. Like he was doing everything he could.
He was exhausted.
Yeah, his voice was hoarse. He's like, if you pass this, you'll save the Blue Jackets. You've got to do it.
Well, here's a question for you, Greg. On the list of, cause it's very cool. It's very hip. Some people would say it's very easy to make fun of Gary Bettman. Oh yeah, let's kick the commissioner. It's a game that's been going on since Frank
Everything
Calder.
You said is true.
Listen, but on the list of accomplishments, because this is a $3 billion league now, on the list of accomplishments for Gary Bettman, where's this one? The big one was salary cap. The second biggest, and this may be the first, is getting rid of Bob Goodenow, because those were two very specific marching orders during the lockout. It wasn't about parity. It wasn't all the things that they maintained. It was about fair ticket prices. That one was the biggest whopper. This was all about two things: get us cost certainty and bring us the head of Bob Goodenow.
Gary
delivered both.
The lockout worked. I mean, there's flaws, and they'll probably try to fix them in a let's shut down half the season kind of way with the next CBA. But I still think that all of the benefits that came out of that work stoppage, be they the rules, be they the financial system, whatever other ancillary stuff you want to look at as being a byproduct of the lockout, I still think that's going to be his legacy. This is great, and we'll see if it works. If not, they'll just blow it up again. But I think the lockout is still going to be above this. As far as Bettman's legacy goes. But there's no question, this is his baby. He shepherded it. Hey, before we get to Portsline, let's talk about Jordan Tutu. I understand we have some of the Shanahammer swinging audio that went down with Jordan Tutu getting a two-game suspension for running Ryan Miller.
At 15:54 of the second period, Nashville forward Jordan Tutu drove into the crease and charged Buffalo goaltender Ryan Miller. As the video shows, Tutu carries the puck down the left wing against Sabres defenseman Christian Ehrhoff and cuts hard toward the net. After Tutu makes his decision to drive the net and has the puck knocked off his stick, Tutu peeks up and sees Miller in his crease and in his path. Although Ehrhoff does make body contact, we do not feel it was significant enough that it altered Tutu's path into Ryan Miller. The onus therefore is on Tutu to avoid or at the very least minimize his contact with the goaltender. Although the puck has been knocked off his stick, Tutu continues on his direct path out of the corner and toward the crease and crashes up and into the Buffalo goaltender. While we believe that Tutu's motivation on this play was to attempt to score and not to hit Miller, the fact remains that it is the attacking player's responsibility to make a better effort not to crash directly into the opposing goaltender. The goaltender must feel protected in his crease. It should be noted that interference on the goalkeeper can be penalized with a minor. There will be times when the contact with the goaltender and the call on the ice will be suitable for the offense. However, We feel the on-ice call of charging and a game misconduct for this particular offense was correct, and that the supplemental discipline is necessary because of the force of the collision and the lack of any significant interference steering Tutu into the goaltender. Tutu has been suspended once and fined once during his 8th season NHL career. However, we have taken into account that he has not been assessed supplemental discipline for the last 4 seasons. To summarize, this was an illegal charge into a goaltender stationed in his crease. There was no apparent injury on the play. Tutu has been suspended once and fined once during his 8th season NHL career. The Department of Player Safety has decided to suspend Jordan Tutu for 2 games.
So you got a little bit. This was Shanahan Pebble Beach, by the way. So while we talk about this, I'm going to play a little Tupac here in the background. I don't know if you can hear it. I just called it up on my MacBook Pro, yo.
Listen to this.
A little California love from Brendan Shanahan. Okay, where do you want to begin with this?
Well, first off, he does the repeat offender thing, even though it's not a repeat offender thing under the letter of the law. Tutu's also has run afoul of the league before, so you have to take that into account. The operative phrase for me, Merrick, in the crease. He had to say that to differentiate between this and the Lucic situation. Goaltender in his crease should be protected. I agree with a lot of what Shanahan said. I think Tutu angled himself. He was clearly taking a path to Miller at the end. Whether he's trying to avoid him or not, he leapt into Miller. Suspension 2 games. Again, like I said yesterday, I give him a penalty. I give him a game misconduct. I don't necessarily see this as a suspendable offense. But once again, I think the benefit of these videos, Merrick, is that we understand what the logic is. We understand where they're coming from. And at the end of the day, you can feel better about their decision knowing where they're coming from thought process-wise with the suspension.
You know what's great about the U.S. military? They're on the cutting edge of everything new and technological. They have, like, cloaking devices now where you can disguise tanks in the desert. And all you can see into the naked eye is what's behind that tank. I just finished Chuck Klosterman's most recent book called The Visible Man, which is all about a scientist that comes up with a cloaking device in order to study human beings when they are being real.
Oh,
because
yeah.
You're not real when you're being watched. It's a fascinating book. It's a great one. And I was skeptical about Klosterman writing fiction, but he's really good. The book is called The Visible Man. Now, I don't know if Christian Ehrhoff is a product of the U.S. military or is the scientist in which Chuck Klosterman is writing about, but did Brendan Shanahan not see Christian Ehrhoff trailing Jordan Tutu and angling him towards the goaltender and cutting off a line to for Jordan Tutu to get away from the goaltender once he was past the point of almost no return? Was he indeed wearing a cloaking device? Am I the only one who could see Christian Ehrhoff on that play? Help me out with this.
So you believe that Christian Ehrhoff is the reason why Jordan Tutu ran Ryan Miller?
No, just the idea that he wasn't guided into the goaltender to me is phony. It's not because he's guided into there by Christian Ehrhoff. Like watch it, you can watch it a million times. Watch how Christian Ehrhoff cuts off a specific lane, which would have been the lane that Jordan Tutu could have taken to get around Ryan Miller. Listen, he hit him and he was in his crease. 5 in a game. I'm cool with that. What I'm not cool with is a 2-game suspension. Why? Because it opens the door for David. Now, doesn't David Booth need to be suspended for running Mika Kiprusoff? See, I think to our conversation, yes, that was the best point, I think, was the one that you made. It's an increased sensitivity because it's A, Ryan Miller, B, the
totally.
Buffalo Sabres, and C, what Lindy Ruff had to say about open season on netminders. That's what this one is all about. Otherwise, until I see David Booth suspended as well, and I would imagine, shouldn't David Booth be suspended? He did almost the exact same thing against Mika Kiprusoff. 24 hours later, we haven't heard a single thing.
Now listen here. I don't like politics in my supplemental discipline. Okay, let's just say that right out. That said, don't you think a 2-game suspension for Tutu at least puts a kibosh on this stuff? You know, if they were shut back saying that maybe there was a little bit of a problem in the league. I'm just playing devil's advocate here, because like we said yesterday, I think that the epidemic of goalies getting run is completely overblown. But what if the league is just saying, you know what, 2 games, wake up call, don't run Ryan Miller, don't be a knucklehead, let's just get it out of the way and do it. And knowing that they can do it because, in my opinion, and as the video shows,
if
Jordan Tutu leaped into Ryan Miller.
If you look, he leaped, and actually, if you look at him in air, he's twisting as if to get away from Ryan, once he realized that, oh man, my only chance is try to get around him somehow. Like on that leap, he doesn't go in straight. He doesn't go in with his elbows up. He doesn't go in bent over as a charge. He's up and he's twisting as he's trying to get around Ryan Miller. Like, I would look at that thing and say, yeah, it was a bad situation. He tried to get out of the way, but boom, you hit him. So 5 in a game, and I'm cool with that. My question now becomes, see, I guess it's fine if you say, yeah, let's just give it to him, and maybe this thing will quiet down, and we'll go back to playing hockey the way we normally have over the past however many decades. But, you know, I've never subscribed to the theory of selective justice. Let's just penalize Jordan Tutu because he's a safe guy to penalize. It's Jordan Tutu, after all. Never mind, it's not David Booth, who was the victim himself, you recall, of Mike Richards' egregiousness a couple of seasons ago.
It's an
easy thing to do to Jordan Tutu. All I'm saying is I don't like the idea of selective justice. And if you're going to maintain you're not going to be selective in your justice and you're going to protect goaltenders, what does David Booth get?
Nothing.
And that's right. He won't get anything. He won't get a single thing. But it's the same play.
I don't agree with the suspension, but I do agree with Shanahan that you can underline this, highlight it, write it in the sky. Goaltenders inside their crease need to be protected. If you want to skate out and be a third defenseman, if you want to pull the trick that Ryan Miller pulled, then I say you're fair game. I say you're fair game, and here comes the Lucic train, okay? But if you're inside your crease, there needs to be a reasonable expectation, and it sounds like I'm parroting Shanny now, there needs to be a reasonable expectation that you're not going to get bulldozered by Jordan Tutu because he thinks he has a right to skate through you with the puck.
I go back to Kiprusoff and David Booth. Was Kiprusoff in his crease, or was he wandering? He's in his crease on the post.
But again, it's like, but if they suspend Booth, are you okay with that then? Either way, you're pissed off. Should you be happy they're not suspending Booth?
No, I am, but I don't like the idea of selective justice. I really don't. I don't like this idea that, yeah, we're just going to do this
to calm down the Buffalo Sabres. But hold on, isn't selective justice also simply saying that a guy's a repeat offender?
But
like,
Shanahan
Booth is flawless.
But Shanahan has already said he's been 4 years clean, right? And 18 months, you get wiped out, right? Your past.
You get wiped out based on the money that you get the financial hit that you take. You don't get wiped out because it's not as if that those incidents never happened. He said that as much in when Wisniewski went down. Look what I did. When Wisniewski went down.
I know.
Hi, Sean Avery. Yeah, I know, right? So he brought up all the stuff from the past. It's not as if that stuff doesn't exist on your record. It's that you can't be used any longer to increase the financial hit when you get suspended.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, again, I go back to, you're fine with the Jordan Tutu suspension, but you don't think that David Booth should be. I just don't like this idea that it's one very specific set of rules for one very specific circumstance and one player, and an almost identical play will receive nothing at all.
Like I said, I don't think that he should have been suspended, but if you're going to talk about selective enforcement, I've got no problem with them selectively enforcing a rule against the repeat offender, a guy who plays dirty. Jordan Tutu is a dirty player. He's a dirty player.
Yep.
Okay,
absolutely.
We can agree on that.
Yeah. That's never
David
been a disagreement.
David Booth's not a dirty player.
But the act is still the act, Greg. Like, the act is still the act, and there's a first time for everything for everybody. Right? Does that mean you don't get penalized at all? Now, sure, I understand the penalties should be less, but shouldn't there be something? I mean, if you're going to go this way with Jordan Tutu, do you not have to go a certain way, a similar way with David Booth?
I just realized, by the way, after the show yesterday, and we're waiting on Aaron Portsline to hop on and talk about the Blue Jackets, I just realized we didn't get around to talking to Fistrich yesterday. I'm talking about Fistrich.
Oh, right,
and,
yeah.
And the hit on Niederreiter.
Yeah, I was fine with that hit, too. I was.
Of course you were.
Well, I mean, hey man, it's bang bang, it's along the boards. He does the Scott Stevens route of crouching and hitting upwards, and that's fine.
Yeah,
that's
which
still
is not allowed
do.
Anymore. Scott Stevens
sure
can play in the league. That's a total headshot. Come on.
It's not a total headshot.
You're making me feel like Proto here. You're making me feel like I'm a pacifist.
You knew
it's
what
a
you
total
were in.
Headshot.
You knew what you were in for when you started this podcast. Like, I'm from the school they burned down to build the old school. We've already established that. I had no problem with that.
Dirtiest player in the game, this one over here. I'll tell you that.
Oh,
right.
Rick Flair. Yeah, nice.
All right, while we're waiting for Portsline, let's go and rock and roll with some puck headlines. What say you?
Merrick versus Wyshynski. Puck headlines.
Sorry, I was in the middle of finishing off my Blue Monkey coconut water.
Again, Portsline coming up.
question of the day, your biggest winner, biggest loser when it comes to realignment. We're going to be reading those in a bit. Puck Headlines, Dateline National Hockey League All-Star Game. Merrick, I have your latest vote totals for week three.
Let's hear it.
Phil Kessel leads all forwards with 384,000 votes.
Still,
number two. Sid the Kid creeping up to 320,865 right behind him. No less than 765 votes behind him, Daniel Alfredsson. Those are the only three players, Merrick, with over 300,000 votes right now amongst the forwards.
I wonder where's do you have the full rundown of all the players? I'm wondering where Jonathan Taves is right now.
Jonathan Taves, sir, is number eight.
Taves?
Number eight, 174,000 votes. He is behind such players as Spezza, Lupul, McCulloch, Giroux, right ahead of Evgeny Malkin.
You know, because after the program yesterday, when we were talking about our Hart Trophy favorites, and we were talking about Claude Giroux and Phil Kessel, the one that I of course, the show's over, and you realize, oh, I should have said this on the show, I would have gone the audible and gone Jonathan Taves. I think he's been the best player in the game this year. And Sidney Crosby, team, you know, as a peak performer, as he comes back, you can say, yeah, he's the best player in the game, but from a health point of view and being there the entire season so far, I don't think there's been a better player this year in the NHL than Jonathan Taves.
Team Sagan, as a write-in candidate, has Tyler up to 22, ahead of Ryan Kessler, ahead of Patrick Sharp, ahead of Marian Gaborik, and ahead of both Patrice Bergeron and Milan Lucic. Defenseman, Merrick, leading it, no surprise, Erik Karlsson, 351,957 votes.
Jekyll and
right
Hyde,
behind
by
him,
the way.
Dion.
Jekyll and Hyde.
Oh,
Jekyll and Hyde.
You mean defensively?
Player. Oh, man. Have
Wings
you seen...
Overall.
I can't think of another example. Maybe you can. Of someone who is so completely a different player when he has the puck than when he doesn't have it. Like, it's night and day. It's not even night... It's not even apples and oranges. It's chalk and cheese. That's the difference.
Are you saying he's sort of like a Brian Campbell type?
No, because Campbell can play a little bit of defense, and positionally he's very sound, and he can body check. Ask RJ Umberger what that feels like. So no, not like Brian Campbell. He's completely different. Like it's night. He'll join the rush. I've never seen this before. He'll join the rush as a defenseman, and then as the play goes up ice and into the other team's zone, he'll just stay there and like park out beside the net. I don't know what they teach you that in Sweden. I suspect they don't, but somewhere along the way he's picked it up. I've never seen that.
So he is leading amongst defensemen. Dion Phaneuf right behind him. Chris Letang behind them. Both Karlsson and Phaneuf over 300,000 votes. Nobody else is, including Zdeno Chara and Nicholas Lidstrom. So it looks like Battle of Ontario plus Sidney Crosby right now for the starting positions in the All-Star game. I say this, Merrick, because we have ourselves an upset brewing amongst goaltenders.
Look out.
The number one goalie right now with 248,000 votes, James Reimer of the Toronto Maple Leafs, ahead of Timmy Thomas, ahead of Marc-Andre Fleury. Those three goaltenders, the only ones with over 200,000 votes. So right now, it is a neck and neck and neck race between Reimer, Thomas, and Fleury.
You could even say that right now, James Reimer is not the best goaltender on the Leafs. That Jonas Gustafsson is.
How dare you,
man,
sir.
Got beaten down hard by his head coach over the past, month or month and a half. Lost his job to Ben Scrivens, who isn't that far removed from Cornell, for crying out loud. And all that, what's Gustafsson's record now? Like 9-4? And he was exceptional last night against the Rangers. So, as Arsenio Hall once said, things that make you go,
Dateline Detroit Red Wings. Forward Valtteri Fuppola won't play in tonight's game against St. Louis due to a deep cut he sustained on his lower right shin Sunday in Colorado.
Can you say that again?
Deep cut?
There, one of the greatest scenes in Slapshot is when Maurice Moe is trying to pick up what turns out to be Paul Newman's daughter in the movie Slapshot. And he's talking to her and he looks at her and he pulls off his glasses and he says, "That is a very deep cut." So whenever I hear deep cut, I always think of the late, great Mo from Slapshot. So thank you for that, Greg Wyshynski.
Dateline, Century cut. Of the Hockey Universe.
Very deep cut.
Steve Simmons of the Toronto Sun wonders, is Brian Burke an embarrassment? Brian Burke is out of control. He doesn't want to just run the Toronto Maple Leafs. He wants to run the newspapers. He wants to tell editors what columnists and radio voices can and cannot write or say. He wants to control what you read, what you think, and what you perceive to be the truth. I find this whole thing to be so overblown. I find the feud between Burke and the media to be so prefab and so tedious. But I will say this, our good friend James Myrtle did clue me into one aspect of this whole thing, which is that when you do lie about who is playing for you in a game, especially when it's a goaltender, it can have some implications in the gambling lines.
Yes.
So don't you think that raises this whole Ron Wilson lied about his goalie starting thing a little bit to a different level?
What's interesting about this one to me is a couple of things. One, Brian Burke maintained that it was just a coach changing his mind, which wasn't true because, as Ron Wilson himself said, I made my mind up 3 days ago. I just didn't tell you guys. Even when you asked, I said that that Monster was going to be starting and it wasn't going to be James Reimer. And Brian Burke sort of defended his head coach on faulty grounds. But, you know, the acrimonious relationship between the general manager and the media, this isn't new territory. Like, two things. When you take over as a general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, like, you have to know what it's like. And every general manager says, yeah, I know what it's like. And then by the time their term is over, they say, wow, I had no idea it was that bad. And also, if you're a writer, I mean, you should know that eventually it's going to get to this point, don't you? Right? I mean, this is, you know, Brian Burke is, you know, a very, I would still maintain media savvy, general manager and likes the spotlight. And
it's just like you guys in the media to say I'm media savvy. I mean, that's exactly how you want to portray it. You guys don't want me to be myself. You guys want me to be something that I'm not. And I'm not going to be like that. My coach is allowed to choose whatever goaltender he wants to choose. You guys in the media don't dictate who plays for me. Okay.
Here's where it gets complicated for the Maple Leafs from my point of view. If they're fine lying to the media about something as trivial as goaltenders, then they can't complain when people in the media go to hockey players' mothers to get accurate information. Like, if you're going to lie, they will go elsewhere to find information.
The credibility card is gone. The problem with you guys in the media is that you don't appreciate lying. Okay, I lied when I said that we won the Kessel trade. I mean, that was a lie. So, I mean, you're selectively choosing which lies you accept and which lies you don't accept. And I think that's the problem with the media today.
All right, let's cut the headline short.
Tell them the truth. Yeah, let's get them on. Get them on.
Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch joining us here on Merrick versus Wyshynski on a chaotic day on the program. How are you, Aaron?
Yeah. I'm doing all right. I like hearing this. It makes the Blue Jackets seem somewhat less dysfunctional.
It's so funny, Aaron, because for the first month and a half of the season, it was, you know, the death watch around Scott Arneil and what's happening with the Blue Jackets. And there's the ominous, you know, eyes of TJ Eckelberg and the Great Gatsby in the form of Ken Hitchcock looking down, at his team, the likes of which to judge the Blue Jackets to one day take over. When did it change? Like, I know there was, you know, Hitchcock goes to St. Louis and there's been coaching shuffles, and I find it very bizarre that since, you know, the rumors of Scott Arneil's demise, we've seen a Jack Adams trophy winner fired and a Stanley Cup coach fired as well. Where did it change for the Blue Jackets? Because it's kind of been silent.
Yeah. Well, four teams have fired their coach, none of them the last place team in the league. Doesn't quite seem to match. Mm-hmm. It's a peculiar situation. I think people have almost, at least Nashville guys, have almost thrown up their arms and thought, God, nothing is ever going to change there. If they're not compelled to make a change early in the season when, as you mentioned, they were heading south at an alarming rate, then when will they be compelled to make change? Look, they're still last place in the league, the overall standing. Has much changed? And no, I mean, the season is pretty much over for them. They're probably going to need 78 points in the last 56 games. Not going to happen. And you wonder if not then, then when? And I don't have an answer. At this point, I still believe Scott Housen believes in Scott Arneil. I still believe that Mike Priest believes in Scott Housen. I think overarching, I think you're looking at a situation where they're not quite sure what the problem is or how to fix it, which is perhaps the most damning.
Is the Arneil thing at all financial? Because, I mean, obviously the Blue Jackets' lease situation, their money situation has become the stuff of public discourse. I think there's a lot of people out there that say to themselves, why would they fire Arneil in a lost season, eat that contract, when they can just ride it out and fire him in the summer?
Well, there's that. I also wonder, you know, is this Scott Housen's call to make? I mean, if you're going to change everything this coming summer, do you want to bring a new coach in right now and have the next general manager absorb the new coach, whether he wants him or not? I mean, that's getting a bit ahead of ourselves here. I don't think it's financial. I truly don't. I mean, this is a club that has not shied away from spending money. They just haven't done it wisely. I mean, they're fifth or sixth in the league in cap expenditure, depending upon what day you look at it. They're up there. They have spent. They now have Ken Hitchcock off the books, so they're back to paying just one coach, which is a new thing for the Blue Jackets as well. I don't think it's financial. I think it's paralysis. I think they're not quite sure what is wrong. They're not quite sure how to fix it, which is worse than a lot of possibilities.
Hey, Aaron, I want to get to realignment in a second and what it means for the Columbus Blue Jackets' point of view, but one final thought on Columbus for me on the ice. Derek Brassard will not be on it this evening, scratched again by the Columbus Blue Jackets. What's the end game here with Brassard?
You know, I don't know. Certainly Alan Walsh advanced the situation, you might say, with his rather personal statement a week or so ago. It certainly is starting to look like a Mike Commodore situation. And the thing is, this does not just look poorly upon the player. I mean, has he played well? No, he has not. This is a guy who had 17 goals, 47 points last season. It's not like he's never had success at the NHL level. But this is a failure of the organization, yet another failure of the organization. Look at their top 10 picks, how many they've had through the years. This is the gift that you get for having horrible seasons. If you blow those picks, you're having horrible seasons and you're not benefiting from it at all. They've chased way too many high-end draft picks out of the building. It certainly looks like the Brassard situation is not going to end well in Columbus. He's being scratched tonight in Montreal, his home province. That's a personal thing. And again, he has not been a great player when he's played. Early in the season, he struggled, as did Antoine Vermette, as did R.J. Umberger, as did Rick Nash, Jeff Carter. I mean, you can make a whole list of Blue Jackets who did not play well early in the season. And he has been scratched more than anybody else, which sort of gives a bit of credence to Alan Walsh's comment that he's been singled out. But I don't think it's going to end well, but I can't say today what that end is going to be.
Is there a fear that perhaps... If Scott Arneil isn't going to be the guy long-term for the squad, that if you trade someone like Derek Brassard now, who still has plenty of upside, the skill set is the other, is sure he hasn't had the best season so far, but if you get rid of him now, then say at the end of the season, or maybe even before it, you'll have a situation where nobody has won. The player's gone, and so is the coach.
Yeah, and they've done that too many times. They've cashed in their chips. I mean, Filipov, I don't think he's ever going to be an NHL player, certainly not at the level that people expected when he was drafted. But this is a guy you draft high and you dump for a fourth-round draft pick, I think it was. I mean, these are the reasons that Columbus is Columbus, why they have had no traction. I mean, the other way to look at this is when Ken Hitchcock was fired and Scott Arneil replaced him, one of the main reasons given was that the young players in the organization needed to mature. They needed to take ownership of the group. I ask you to find one of those players, one of those young core players back then, that has done that under Scott Arneil. Brassard has not. Certainly Steve Mason has not. He has gone south in a rather alarming way. Voracek's gone. Filipov is gone. It hasn't happened. So what is the issue now in Columbus? They need somebody. I almost think they need to bring in two or three high-level type executives who have experience, who have won Stanley Cups, who have been to the playoffs, who can run an overhaul here, much like the Edmonton Oilers are doing right now. It almost seems like it's getting to that point.
Sunnier topics, happier topics. Realignment worked out pretty well for the Columbus Blue Jackets. I actually made them both a winner and a loser on Puck Daddy today. Winner, obviously, because from a time zone perspective, from a travel perspective, things are a lot better. But I still feel like, Aaron, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, I still feel like they'd rather be in a division or a conference, whatever you want to call it, with Pittsburgh, with Philly, with New York, with Boston. Those are the teams, yeah, to me that the Ohio fan cares about more than your Nashvilles and your St. Louis's.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Could they have traded... Or would they have traded an opportunity to be in a group with Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Toronto, rather than stay with Detroit? I think they would have. That's three rivals, three teams that travel to Columbus, three teams within a drive of Columbus. I think that would be much preferred. I look at it this way, too. Like I understand that they're happy with the home-and-home scheduling matrix, which will cut their trips far out west in half. That is a big add. But you know what? This league changes its schedule, its scheduling matrix, if you will. It seems like they change it every 4 or 5 years. They change it three times since the Blue Jackets have been in the league. What they do not change very often is realignment, right? So for Columbus, this was probably the best and last time possible to get into the East. Now, having said that, there's still a slight possibility of the Phoenix organization moves somewhere other than Quebec City, someplace west of the Mississippi, if you will, then perhaps they seek to balance the four conferences with two in the so-called East gaining a 15th team. But then even then, maybe it's Detroit instead of Columbus. I think this was, as much as it was a good night for Columbus last night, it helped them. It was not the home run they were looking for.
And frustrating, too, when you consider Chicago's not going anywhere from a credibility and a quality point of view for a number of years. St. Louis is getting better. Minnesota's a top team in the friggin' NHL, for crying out loud. Detroit's story is well told. And Dallas, now with solid ownership, has begun to start the trend upwards, to say nothing of the Winnipeg Jets. And when they, you know, actualize with some of their kids, you know, they'll be competitive for a playoff spot. How many years is this team doomed, do you think, now with, you know, further absences from the playoffs, considering they're right in there in a conference with Detroit, Chicago, St. Louis, Minnesota, and Dallas?
Yeah, I missed your initial phone call, boy. Sorry about that. I was talking to Mike Priest about, you know, if you think of what Calgary went through all those years where they were a pretty darn good team and couldn't get past Edmonton. Yep. And there are lots of examples in the East as well. I mean, at the end of the day, they have to be good enough. They just have to be good enough. Or it doesn't matter what conference you're in. I don't know if you can make plans today, scheduling plans today, conference alignment plans today, based upon who's good and who's not. I mean, at some point, doesn't Detroit have to take a step back a little bit at some point? Who knows? Doesn't Columbus have to take a step forward at some point? The joke here is that, of course, Columbus has never made playoff plans, so they're not sure which one works best for them or not. that's almost, for Columbus and Columbus fans, that's almost a secondary issue. They just have to be good enough to make it first before they can worry about being stuck behind the elite teams in the league.
Great stuff, Aaron. We really appreciate you hopping on, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Okay, thanks for having me, guys.
There he is. I love that man. I think he's one of the best beat writers in the game. And he's one of these guys that, like Heike, like Mike Russo, one of these guys that just has, he's on the beat, and the beat is his life, and he knows every nook and cranny of that organization. It's great stuff.
And not just the Columbus Blue Jackets, but elsewhere. And this is where a guy like Mike Russo in Minnesota really shines as well. But I'll tell you what, Columbus Blue Jackets, even though it's a new team in the NHL by new and old standards, you should be thankful. I'm saying this honestly. You should be thankful you have someone covering your team like Aaron Portsline. Because a lot of, and you know this a lot better than I do in the United States, in a lot of newsrooms, Greg, the hockey assignment gets, you know, shuffled off to the most junior guy and the newest reporter, because everybody wants football, everybody wants baseball, and the last, you know, the lowest man on the totem pole in a lot of newsrooms gets the hockey assignment. Columbus is blessed. The Blue Jackets are blessed. Like, if you're a Blue Jackets fan, you have one of the tops in the biz covering your team, so you really should be thankful.
And then they graduate, like John Glennon from the Tennessean, who covered the Predators for a long time, graduated. I think he covers the Titans there. They're blessed now with Josh Cooper down there, so
anyway, yeah. it's like journalism talk. Now all of a sudden we're the Pointer Institute here.
let's go back and tell jokes.
Question of the day was, give us your winner, give us your loser of NHL realignment. Gibby Stash writes in, as a Yotes fan, any realignment that includes the Dogs is a winner. I would have to agree with that at this point in time in the franchise history. John E. Muir writes in, winner, Phoenix. Now they can move to Portland and not F everything up. Loser, Columbus, still worst in their own conference. Thanks, Atlanta. Brent Lyles writes in, this is about being the invading enemy fan. One of the fun parts of being a Leafs fan outside of Toronto is taking over the local rink. Exactly. Strength in numbers, invading army. It's all very sort of European soccer. It's very, very cool. Being the enemy fan is awesome.
I got a lot of tweets about Ryan Lambert's appearance on the program today and how we have to get the vampire quote, from the interview. Do you have that up on Puck Daddy yet, by the way, that audio?
The interview is up on Puck Daddy, yeah. You can listen
can
to the
we
audio.
Get
it's about 28 minutes long.
Somewhere, wow. Oh, Ryan Lambert, attaboy. Somewhere in there, could we get the vampire quote in our intro?
Yeah, sure. We'll cut it down.
A couple people tweet me already and say, "Man, you got it," because you've got the Brian Burek and I've got the Ilya Bryzgalov. But it sounds to me like the vampire line will take on a life of its own and become that epic defining moment for Lambert.
It was killer. Michael from San Jose, real quick. I would say Tampa or Florida, but no one gives an S about how they feel. Again, I agree. I think Tampa and Florida got screwed. Scotty Burnside of ESPN last night put up his plan for realignment, what he thought should have happened, and I think there was something to it. You know, I think you could have taken the Penguins, the Flyers, and the Capitals, moved them over to the Northeast Division teams, and then put Tampa Bay, Florida, and Carolina over in the what used to be the Atlantic. And yeah, granted, you take Philly away from New York, you take Pittsburgh away from New York, you take you know, the Patrick Division wouldn't be complete again. But from a geographic standpoint, from a competitive balance standpoint, I actually think it would be better. And I'm not just saying that as a Devils fan hoping to feed from the trough of the Southeast Division. I feel as though from a competitive balance standpoint and geography standpoint, it would have made more sense to put the Southeast, the Tampa, the Florida, and the Carolina teams with the Atlantic Division teams.
Do you think that major power broker Ed Snyder was going to get away from the New York Rangers?
Oh, not at all. I think staying with the Rangers and the Devils was more important than staying with the Penguins for those guys.
I don't know about that.
I don't think. Who are they in the Winter Classic with? They win the Winter Classic with the Penguins or the Rangers?
Who, the Philadelphia Flyers? Everybody wants Pittsburgh Penguins. Everybody wants that.
Hold on. You say everybody wants the Pittsburgh Penguins. Do you really think at this juncture, knowing that we will realign probably within the next 7 years, that the Philadelphia Flyers want to be in the same division as Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Marc-Andre Fleury and Dan Bylsma?
Who do they want to play? Who do they want as an opponent for the Winter Classic? Like, who do you want to fill the building with?
But that's what I'm saying. I don't think they want Pittsburgh in that division.
From a competitive point of view, get them out.
Right.
Get lost. See you later. No way.
Okay.
A number from Dallas, Happy Girl 2525 on Twitter, winner, Dallas, loser, Florida teams. Yeah. Hey, you know what? Tom Gilardi, the new owner, he must think this owning an NHL team is awesome.
Right.
He got it in bankruptcy, like within a matter of a couple of weeks, essentially, after getting, the bums rush in Vancouver. And now what's the first thing the NHL does? They do it like the most ultimate solid of any team in the NHL. Like, this has been fantastic for Tom. If you want to talk about, because you earlier mentioned how Detroit has zero to complain about now because the NHL turned itself upside down, Tom Gilardi and the Dallas Stars now can complain about absolutely zero in the National Hockey League because Dallas won large on
couple questions for you, sir. Do you think the modern 3-point games will fix the problem of having teams eliminated from playoff contention early?
The fact that there are, like, the presence of the loser point?
The fact that there's parity. Will parity help make up for the fact that the playoff races got a lot less mathematically complicated?
No, because I think that really only tightened things up when it's a 16-team basis, when it's a 16-team frame that you're working with. But when you really drill down, you have a seven teams in your conference and an 8 teams in your conference, those top 4 get pretty tight and pretty exclusive pretty fast. So I don't think the loser point really mitigates it. I think it mitigates when you're dealing with 16 teams, but not when you're dealing with 8 or 7.
The other question is sort of related to a conversation that we were going to have today about the playoff format that's, if not proposed, at least what people assume it's going to be, which is that you have the 4 teams from each conference, Then they battle 1-4, 2-3. Then those winners battle. Then those winners come out of the conference, and then they do something with them. Either they reseed them 1-4, or they do things geographically. The general managers are going to figure that out because the owners punted on it. But the issue that we both have with this alignment is that you're, like we said before, there's going to be a fifth place team that gets screwed at some point because they're going to look over at another conference, say, look at that four seed. Can't believe they're in the playoffs. Can't believe we're out. We're a victim of being in a very competitive division. So the question is there a way around this? Should the NHL look at, or should they have adopted a format wherein the fifth place team in a division, if it's got more points than the fourth place team in a geographically similar division, then jump over that team, become the fourth seed in that other conference? In other words, why not do a thing where five get in from one conference, three get in from the other conference, just to make sure the best teams in the league are in your postseason tournament?
To establish and maintain the credibility of regular season, absolutely. And the American Hockey League gets used in a lot of ways as a guinea pig for a lot of tests for the National Hockey League, right? The mandatory 2 minutes for flipping the puck over the glass, different line configurations, rule configurations, shootout configurations. It's kind of in a lot of ways used, even though it is its own standalone league. It still gets used because there's a good relationship, healthy relationship between the two leagues. It gets used as a guinea pig. And that's what the American Hockey League does. Like, if the NHL wants to borrow from a tradition or see how that works in action, it's been in action in the American Hockey League for years now, where if you're a five and have more points than a four in your, in a division beside you, as a five, you go in. Like, you're it, and it's done. So if there was any, you know, hesitation, or you wanted to study how this worked, or form a focus group about it, just ask Dave Andrews how it works in the American Hockey League. It's a simple phone call. All that information is right there, but I don't think they want to do that, Greg, because of what we talked about yesterday, and this is all about travel and time zone, and they don't want to bugger up and make someone's travel that much more elaborate than normally it would be. They want less plane and more bus. Thank you very much.
And speaking of buses, I'm very conflicted because I grew up with the Patrick Division. I grew up with those battles. I grew up with those playoffs. It's the reason I'm a hockey fan. Okay. Those rivalries. So I'm conflicted because on the one hand, I'm very happy that the Patrick Division has been reunited plus Carolina. I'm very happy about that. On the other hand, I am from the "it ain't broke, so don't try to fix it" school when it comes to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I'm sorry, but since 1993, we've had a pretty damn good format. We've had a pretty damn good format full of some surprises, full of some Cinderellas, full of a couple weeks at the end of the season where there are 1,000 teams in play. I understand the necessity for change in some cases. I'm still not convinced that junking the 1-8 format is in the best interest of the National Hockey League.
Because of the upset factor. And there won't be any more jaw-dropping upset.
Because we're going to go from...
Yeah, there won't be, you know, old-school fans with, hey, there won't be any more, you know, the Oilers just beat the Montreal Canadiens. Holy smokes, how did that happen? There won't be any more, Montreal just beat Washington in 7. Whoa, 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 what? Yeah. Those days
are gone. Archer Surbe. You don't get Archer Surbe anymore.
Yep.
And I think the real issue for me is that it's like, you go from having a bunch of teams vying for playoff seeds to having a bunch of teams trying to climb over each other for home ice. Like, that was always the big difference for me between the conference format and the division format, is there's a finite number of spots in your division, and you're either going to try to get to four or get to two. You know, one is usually established. It just seems like there's less pieces in play than there are in 1-8. And I've really become a fan of, in the last couple weeks of the season, doing the playoff death watch, going to that site and seeing all the percentages and the tragic numbers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that we don't have that now in this format. And again, the last few years of the Stanley Cup playoffs are the reason why, along with the Winter Classic, the NHL is making money hand over fist. They've lucked out with Boston, with Chicago, Philly, the Penguins, and Detroit. They've lucked out with these teams going as far as they did. And I just didn't feel like there was any reason to scrap a playoff format that's been working so well.
Hey, maybe there's a real obvious answer to this, and this just came to me, in my tiny little brain here. How do they do the All-Star game now?
Yeah, I don't know.
You got four conferences, there's no East-West. How do you do the All-Star game?
Well, I mean, I guess you just keep on doing the captains pick the players thing, right?
I guess.
They were kind of getting to this anyway, right? Like, they scrapped the whole conference versus conference. The fans now just vote for six starters. It's almost like, they knew this is where it was all headed.
How long has this been in the back of Gary Bettman's brain, do you figure?
Well, I think it's probably been on a cocktail napkin for at least 4 years. As far as the brain goes.
Oh, I saw a cocktail napkin contract, by the way, when I was at the Hall of Fame Resource Center 2 weeks ago. Last week.
That's awesome.
The trade for Frank Mihaljevic for $1 million written on a piece of paper from the Royal York Hotel, which I believe was grabbed from behind the bar. It's awesome, dude.
When you're
coming here, I'm taking you there.
I love it. I think you bring up an interesting point though, is that like, why do this now? Like, what is the compelling reason to realign now?
I think it's anticipation of two things, relocation and expansion.
Hmm.
Right? Because it's,
when do we,
it's,
when,
it's,
we
it's
know
going
when we might
happen.
Get, we might get relocation next year. When do we get expansion
right.
is the question. After the CBA.
There is plans to build a rink in lovely Markham, Ontario, which is just a little bit north of the city here in Toronto. And you continue to hear the name, you know, Seattle pop up. You continue. Kansas City has a rink, which is owned by who is that again? Greg Wyshynski? Oh yeah, the Anschutz Entertainment Group (AEG), who also just happened to own the Los Angeles Kings. So there is opportunity that is out there, but you want to make it, if you're the NHL, I mean, you want to make this as close to the cradle as you can and make it nice and simple. So when it does happen, you have a framework in place that, you know, you can plug and play teams. And there's a spot waiting for you in that Adams division, for lack of a better term. There's a place waiting for you in another division or conference rather. I think that would be the impetus now, because they're looking at Phoenix and saying, okay, what are we going to do with this? What are we going to do with an expansion model in Toronto? Because there will be one, and it'll be a huge expansion fee, and someone will pay it. I think the NHL wants to make sure the framework is in place by the time both of those things happen. That's my own theory. I don't know that for a fact, but if I'm firing a dart, that's where my dart's landing. You agree or disagree?
So Phoenix goes to Kansas City.
Quebec City.
Okay, they go to Kansas City.
Quebec City.
And then the NHL expands to Quebec City and Toronto. And then using the expansion fee money, Gary Bettman builds himself a house made of diamonds. It's just made of diamonds.
And you know what? It's like Kurtz in Apocalypse Now, and it's lined with like these pegs with like Bob Goodnow's head on one of them, and like the old owner of the Phoenix Coyotes head on another one of them, and all the people that he's destroyed.
I gave an expansion team to Quebec
City. There's Bob Goodnow's head, and there's Jerry Moyes' head over there. Yeah, he took me to bankruptcy, but I had to laugh. Oh, and there's Jim Balsillie. What happened to his research in motion after we beat him down like the protruding nail trying to hijack our team and take it to Hamilton? That's kind of how I see that
there's
mansion.
There's a silhouette of a bald head babbling incoherently over in the corner. Well, on that note, folks, we're going to call it a game, I think, today. We'll be back tomorrow. There's a chance that Dale Talon might join us tomorrow from the Florida Panthers. We're going to try to have him on today to talk about realignment. Hopefully tomorrow talk about realignment. And the question I'm dying to ask Talon, if we get him on, how did he know? How did he know that this recipe was going to produce this souffle?
It's funny because, you know, by his own admission, he had to be stopped and told to put the phone down. He was signing guys like crazy in the summer. He's like, I was out of control. I just couldn't stop signing players. Hey, you know, we talk about, you know, Hart Trophy candidates at the quarter pole and Vezina and Calder and all that. Would he be the early candidate for GM of the year?
Who? Talon?
Talon. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Because he's completely redone this team.
Yeah, there's nobody who did that amount of heavy lifting with his team, for
right.
sure.
Right. And had that much success, like, boom, right away. Now, I mean, not just players, but coach and everybody. It's got
to
be Dale Talon.
Who else would be a GM of the year would be? Like,
and the year, we talked about this in the first week when we talked about the GM awards, and I think it was when you busted out on this program, anyhow, your first Brian Burke impression. The year the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup was the maiden year for the GM's award, and someone amongst the GM fraternity, even though he was out of a job and dismissed by the Blackhawks, voted for Dale Talon. Bravo, bravo. This would be, if this continues, he's got the GM award. Hands down.
You heard it here first. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. A very epic episode. Thanks to Ryan Lambert for being Ryan Lambert. Thanks to Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch. I am Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports. Thanks to you, Jeffrey Merrick.
Yeah, I'll be doing, for those tuned in on Sportsnet West, the Calgary Flames Carolina Hurricanes game this evening as Kirk Muller looks for win number one.
Take care, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thank you.